Hello, my name is Mark Seifert. I work for the Ag Research Service in Boise, Idaho. I'm listed as the only author here just because most of this material is my fault, but a lot of people helped me out, obviously. Today's talk is about dealing with data that are collected at spatial resolutions that are much coarser than the processes that we're trying to portray. We've talked about the importance of soil moisture all day, I guess. Some of the applications that this information could be very useful for in the region where I'm working, water supply, forage production, fire hazards, all directly related to the soil water content. But we have the situation, which has been a real limitation for years now, is that the critical variability of soil moisture occurs on the scales of tens of meters, whereas our satellite platforms and a lot of the climatological models look at very much larger scales, tens of kilometers. And the other thing is that a lot of these talks we hear about, we're looking at what's happening at 5 centimeter water content, when really what's happening, what affects the water supply, the forage and fire, all these applications, is what's happening in the total soil water profile. So how much water is stored in the profile? So the place I'm going to be talking about is the Reynolds Creek Experimental Watershed. It's located in southwestern Idaho. It's kind of representative of a lot of terrain in Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Utah, the neighboring states. Like the region, it's mountainous, so we have an elevation range of over 1,000 meter gradient. This area is 238 square kilometers. You can see at the bottom here, that's about 8 kilometers across. And the precipitation ranges from about 250 millimeters a year at the bottom to a little over a meter a year at the top. Most of it's snow at the top. This is what it looks like. So we have semi-arid vegetation, sagebrush in the valleys, the mountaintops, coniferous forest or aspen groves mixed with sagebrush and sometimes very sparse vegetation. In the middle elevations, there's you can have dense sagebrush, high sage we call it sometimes, mixed with all kinds of different things. And at the higher elevations, most of the precip is snow. We have a network of soil moisture monitoring sites out there, including now a COSMOS site. These green dots are were set up for the AMSR, support the AMSR network, and Mike talked about that a little bit. In addition, we have these red dots represent places where we measure the water content to the bedrock. It's so at several locations to bedrock. And so just reiterating a little bit, some of the problems, if we look at the soil water content, and these are just 8 of those sites, there's 20 of them, if I plotted them all, you'd see nothing but a mess. The point is, there's a huge amount of variability, spatial variability of soil water content across the watershed. And the idea of how do you statistically sample that kind of variability, and how would you know that it really represents some kind of average? Even if you had 20 or 40 or 400, what would that mean? And then if you did get that and you really knew what the average water content was for the first 5 centimeters, how would you relate that to the profile water content? And just to illustrate that a little bit, here I have a slide of the vertical variability. So one issue is the horizontal variability. Another is the vertical variability. So this is a site in the high sagebrush vegetation type, where we have a profile water content plotted on the x-axis, so that's just the total soil water stored, and soil water content plotted on the y-axis. And so you can see there's a big scatter there. So if you measure 25% water content, what's that tell you about the profile? Well, it tells you it could be very, very dry, or it could be very, very wet. Oh, okay, great. But actually, I now think that there's reason for hope that we can, by sort of at least semi-empirically, relating some of the landscape features and hydrology out there, and hydroecology or ecohydrology, if you will, we can greatly constrain the variability. One thing is that there is, and this is sort of a semi-arid region, there's a very strong relationship between or covariance of soil water content and vegetation. And actually, vegetation, we can map at a fairly high level of spatial resolution. This is a Landsat image, 30-meter resolution, vegetation index. At the very low end here, at the low elevations, we have that was a sort of a semi-desert picture I showed you. It just looks like that's what that looks like. And then you can go to the high elevations. You see the coniferous forest or aspen groves, the very green, and what's in between is pretty much in between. We can ground truth this, and we can see a very good correlation between the greenness that we get with these vegetation indices and what's on the ground. This green area in here is irrigated hay fields. But if you look at, even at the high elevations where it's greener, there's still a huge amount of variability. If we take this little, take a little area right up in here and squeeze it out and put it, blow it up here. This is an experimental watershed. We do more research. You can see in this scale here is 200 meters, so you get an idea we have blown up quite a bit. But you see almost the same range in vegetation index within this area that you see for the whole watershed. And that could include from for the southern part of the state to half of Oregon and Washington and Nevada. So what we get is, in this very small area, aspen grove, high sage, and sparse vegetation. These pixels are 30 meter by 30 meters. So that's why I say the critical variability is on the order of tens of meters. So you can have, because in these different colors here, that's completely different forage, completely different water supply or recharge, completely different fire hazard. But they correspond to soils, so the soil map is on here. But you can portray this on the landscape. These are virtually a static property. In other words, a forest is the same place year after year. So we can actually distribute where the soil water is with a map like this. And just to kind of back that up a little bit, here's some data that we collected over a seven-year period in this little area. So we have some data that we collected in the aspen grove. This is plotted on the x-axis. This is the day of water year, so we're going from October 1 to September 30. And this is the average over 7 years of plant available water under the aspen grove. You can see it's about at peak, twice what it is under the high sage, which is even more than what you see in the sparse vegetation. So in these small areas, you see huge differences in the amount of plant available water, and hence huge differences in the vegetation. And this applies to much larger areas. Where we have good snow data, we can simulate the amount of transpiration, which is strongly related to the plant available water, and we can relate that to the vegetation index for large areas in the watershed, and we see good correlations. In other words, yeah, amount of water affects the plant amount of vegetation growth. It's not surprising. I think I'll skip this for now. The other thing is, so we can distribute this in space. It's not uniformly distributed at all. It's clumped. The other thing is that these sites are not randomly varying either. So these number 1 through 13 here represent 13 different sensors that we had in support of the AMSR program that were set up that didn't have any problems for these 2 years. We plotted this relative to the average. So this is the deviation from the average. So zero is that's the average. If you look here, number 8 here is pretty much on the average, and these bars represent 75% of the data we collected. So that's kind of a measure of the range of values we get. Number 8 is just about always on the average. Number 13 is very wet. number one's always very dry. Some of these are always very middle. The point being that for the whole year, there's wet spots and there are dry spots, and they stay wet and they stay dry. And if you look at the next year, and other years as well, you'll find out that the same sites are pretty much always wet and it's pretty much always dry. So if you know what one of them is, you know a lot. I mean, you don't need to... They vary a lot. They're going up and down together. They don't go up and down the same amount all the time, but they're going up and down together. So it's not quite as hopeless as just looking at a random plot. Second, and then the other thing, the final thing, that reason for encouragement, I guess, is that I showed you that there's practically no relationship between the surface and the profile water content. But there is actually some relationship. If you you may have noticed in that plot, I don't know if you were looking closely or not, but there are little data stringers here. The dots kind of are connected slightly. You can kind of see these little lines in here. Those actually are different years. So if you look at water year 2005, for example, that's the red one, it goes up, it comes around. So what's happening is the surface wets up, but the profile doesn't, right? Because it starts off dry if we're starting in a low water content condition. As the season progresses, the profile wets up, and then they dry out together. And in fact, what we could do is, in this case, I just took and looked at the average for the 7 years. And so you could take, okay, these are daily values, so what's the average over those 7 years for October 1, for October 2, October 3, October 4, and just plot it out and run. And what we find is that starting in October, because that's the beginning of the water year, October 1, the average surface water content, this is 10 centimeters, is about 10%, and the profile storage is around 12. And then as the season progresses, the surface goes up, profile doesn't change much. November, that trend continues. I lost my marker here. And then we hit the winter time. Things get a little tricky. That's because we get a lot of freeze and thaw. Freezing with these electronic sensors, this is TDR in this case, freezing is kind of like drying. So it looks like it goes up and down a lot because of the freezing and thawing. By March, usually there's snow on the ground, the soil thaws, and you start having water content increases. That occurs for the remainder of the spring, and then sometime end of May, starts to dry out. And so this pattern, then what happens is things dry out June, July, and then August, September is very dry. So this is a pattern that's repeatable in the year. And if you segregate your relationship by time of year, you look at, say, over here, all these little patterns, these are different years coming down. So you don't have to look at the entire range of values, but you can segregate that and say, okay, I'm just going to look at the spring values. And if you do that, you have your range of values is much more constrained, and you actually can say something about what the relationship between the surface water content and the profile water content is. And so, in conclusion, that's it. So, any questions?
All right, thank you.
Or no, okay.